Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order this morning. Today is Thursday, March 24th, 2016, and it is 8:01 a.m. Today with me, I have Representative Reinbold, Representative Nagyak, Representative Seaton, Representative Hughes, Representative Ortiz, and myself, the Chair, Representative Tilton, and we've just been joined by Representative Drummond, so we have a full committee, and we can move on with business. Before we begin, I'd like to remind members and those who are attending the meeting that if you do have a cell phone, that you silence your phone. Kind of around the building, the idea is if your phone goes off, you bring donuts, and I can't eat donuts, so we don't want to have that happen. Also, I would just like to address a little housekeeping matter for committee members. I do believe that last year we sent a memo out just regarding some committee decorum, and just wanted to apologize maybe to members this morning that things were received maybe a little late in your packets. Well, there was a lot of shuffling around of paper, so my apologies that if you didn't get your packets as early as you would have liked. So we'll be thoughtful of that in the future. If there are people here who are here to testify on HB 338, which we will be taking up today, I do want to let you know that's the third item on the agenda today. We do have a really full agenda. I'm going to try really hard to get to the testimony, but I just want to let you know and you know, and that there's going to be a little bit of a wait, and I wanted you to know that in advance. So today we have three measures that we're going to hear. HB 209 is the Water and Sewer Advisory Committee, which is Representative Foster's bill. And my intentions with that is that we have the CS before us, and we have several amendments that have been prepared jointly between the committee and the sponsor staff. And my intentions are to move that bill out of the House today if that is the will of the committee. Following that, we do have a second bill, HB 370, Municipal Tax Exemptions, and I would request the committee's indulgence to speak to that then set that aside. And lastly, we'll begin our work on HB 338, which is Municipal Property Tax Exemptions, and that is Representative Seaton's bill, and we will start our work on that and then also set that bill aside and have public testimony for whatever we have time for. So with that, I will have our committee aide, Mr. Hilliard, come forward and explain the new CS for HB 209 and the amendments that have been prepared. Mr. Hilliard, if you would come forward and put yourself on the record. Also in the room, we do have Representative Foster and his staff, Hollibo, who will be helping with that bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Heath Hilliard, committee aide to the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee. You have before you a CS for HB 209. It is 29LS0306/E. There were a couple of minor changes to this particular draft from the earlier draft based on the committee's conversation last week. On page 1, line 12, the original language said, systems are provided for all state residents and per responsive to committee discussion. That has been amended to say are provided for all communities of the state. And then on page 3, lines 2 and 4, the respective dates have been changed accordingly to reflect the new year. And that is the, I believe that's the entire substance of the changes to this CS/E. There are three amendments proposed for the committee's consideration dealing with the composition, the appointment process, and the composition of the advisory committee. There was discussion regarding the definition of the Bush caucus. And so in working with the sponsor staff, we've prepared three different amendments. And Amendment 3 is simply a combination of Amendments 1 and 2 if the committee wants to adopt an amendment package, but we provided the committee individual amendments so that there was maximum flexibility for this committee's consideration. So if you want me to go through those amendments one by one, I'm happy to do that.
Go ahead.
So Amendment 1, page 2, lines 7 and 8, the original language said affirmative vote of the majority of the full membership. We've replaced that with the president to reflect this is an appointment by the presiding officer of the Senate. And similarly, correspondingly, page 2, lines 9 and 10, instead of an affirmative vote of the full membership of the House, it's an appointment by the Speaker. Amendment number 2, standalone. Rather than trying to articulate the Bush Caucus membership on the basis of district or regionality, we simply took the communities from the Village Safe Water Project, that or Village Safe Water program, and identified them. We enumerated the communities in which there are projects there, and has the functional, it has the same functional effect of identifying members by district, but in discussion we felt that it was more important to enumerate the specific communities respective to this bill. So, and then again, amendment number 3, all it does is combine amendments 1 and 2.
Our Representative Hughes.
I have a question, and this might be for the sponsor of the bill. Just wondering how many, just, I know makeup can change over time in the legislature, but currently with the list of villages in Amendment 2 and included in 3, how many House representatives, senators that would be? I just was wondering if they happen to be only in 1 or 2 districts.
As, Representative Hughes, through the chair, there are approximately 5 districts that are on the unserved communities list.
Mr.
That would be district.
Can you put yourself on the record, please?
Oh, sorry. Paula Bull, staff to Representative Foster. So the districts on that list are districts 6, 37, 38, 39, 40, and I believe 36.
Okay, and follow up.
Representative Hughes.
Yeah, thank you. That's good. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't only in 1 or 2 people, so we had didn't want to have a very, very tiny group there. So that's good to know. Thank you.
Representative Ortiz.
And just clarification, those last districts that you just mentioned were districts that don't have current projects or associated with this program, or they do?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair. They have projects on the list, but they are, in fact, the unserved communities. So some of them do not have pending projects. It's just the list of communities without current water and sewer service.
Okay.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And on that same point, I'm trying to figure out, I mean, in my district, we have Ozasinka, Rosdolna. There are villages out at the end of East End Road that have Village Safe Water projects. So this is not the list of all of those that have Village Safe Water projects. This is those that are unserved at the present time. Is that correct?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, that is correct. We had considered the entire project list of Village Safe Water, but quite frankly, the list got a little long.
Follow-up, Representative Seaton?
No, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure that we identified that list as being just those that are totally unserved at this time, and that we weren't redefining Village Safe Water Program participants.
Okay. Any other questions? Would the will of the committee be to move individual amendments or to move
Madam Chair,
yes.
If I may, I believe the committee aide has one more amendment to offer.
Let's take a brief at ease. All right, we're back on the record. So at this time, I'm going to turn the gavel over to Representative Seaton. Here you go. And I'm going to go ahead and I will move amendment number 3.
Is there objection to amendment number 3?
I'll object just so I can hear about it.
Okay. Amendment number 3 is the amendment that combines 1 and 2. Let me go back with my glasses real quick. So what it does is it makes the change to the affirmative on page 2, line 7 that we talked about. It after the affirmative vote of the majority of the full membership, it adds of the it says the president, and then affirmative vote of the majority of the full membership, it adds the speaker. And then amendment number two was adding on the groups as we define the rural areas legislators. So we provided three amendments, one and two separately, in case we didn't want to do it all at once. So we're going to move three.
I remove my objection.
Okay, thank you. Objection has been removed. And is there any further objection? Seeing none, amendment number one, which is E.3, has been adopted by the committee.
Amendment number three. Yep. Okay.
But it's
amendment number one. Yes.
Number one to the bill.
There we go. We got it down.
And I'll pass the gavel back to the chairman.
Okay. With that, we are back to the original bill as amended. Were there any questions for Mr. LeBeau or the sponsor, Mr. Representative Foster? No? All right. Representative Hughes.
And I just opened because I was trying to remember from last time the fiscal note is zero, Madam Chair, and I just wanted to point that out, which considering what we're facing right now, I think that's a good idea, but it's still a very important need in our state to be addressing. So I appreciate the sponsor for putting it together in this way that there's not a fiscal note, but that we can still address a need. Thank you.
I do believe that I left public testimony open last time, and so I'm just checking to see there is Bill Griffith is on the line, but I think he's here for questions, I would guess. Is there anybody here in the audience? Okay. In the back. All right, if you'd like to come forward. Kathy, and put your name on the record.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. Kathy Wasserman with the Alaska Municipal League. I'm very happy that Representative Foster has submitted this bill. I, of course, am of the belief that I know we have financial problems in this state, but we need to take care when we can of the people of this state, and this is one of the reasons that we can't continue to just cut without looking at ways to garner some income. Many of these people have been living without water for many years. I will never forget years ago, Senator Stevens, the late Senator Stevens, brought a group of people to the state of Alaska, and he asked me to go around to some of the villages with him. And this was when we had money. And one of the congressmen pulled me aside and said, I am just amazed at the poverty in this state. And I don't know why it took me by surprise. I mean, the rest of us just look at it as the way things are. But I suddenly started looking at things through different eyes and thought, you know, we don't, and this is no offense to anyone if they're from Mississippi, but we always seem to be at the bottom around Mississippi, and I don't want this state to be down further than Mississippi in the way we take care of our people. That was just, I'm sorry, this is probably rambling. But I think we need to start the discussion. And I hope the legislature not only looks at the discussion, but then takes it a step further and decides how do we help the people of this state. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Kathy. Appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else in the room here to testify on House Bill 209? And there is nobody online, so hearing, seeing none, I will close the public testimony. And are there any other questions from the committee members? Okay, and with that, I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move a committee substitute for House Bill 209, that's 29LS0306/E, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Hearing and seeing no objections, CSHB 209 as amended will move from committee, and we will take a brief at East to sign over.
Madam Chair, I would like to clarify with attached zero fiscal note.
With attached zero fiscal note. Thank you, Representative Seaton. With that, we will move it from committee. We'll take a brief at East to sign the report. Thank you. I'm going to come back on the record, and we are going to do a little housekeeping again. We're going to need to move back and rescind our action and start over again on adopting that.
Madam Chair, I move we rescind our action in moving version E from committee.
Are there any objections? Okay. Hearing, seeing none, we have rescinded the action.
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt version E as our working document.
And are there any objections? Hearing, seeing none, we have adopted version E.
Madam Chair, I move CS for HB 209-29-LS-0306 / E as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached to your fiscal note.
And do I hear and seeing no objections, we will go ahead and move the bill. Thank you. We had failed to adopt the CS, so that's what we needed to run through into that. All right. So we're going to move on. The next item on our agenda is HB 370. And let's see. This HBC 370 was brought forward by the committee. The committee is still working on with the different stakeholder groups on a forthcoming CS. So rather than do a formal presentation we currently have in our possession, I'm going to go ahead and pass the gavel again to Representative Seaton and offer a very brief overview of the intent behind the legislation, and then it's my plan to dedicate time to this bill sometime in the future. So with that, if it is, there are no objections from the committee, I'll just give you a quick brief overview of what the bill is about. All right, and hearing, seeing no objections, I'll move forward. HB 370, in the time of large reductions in state capital and operating budget spending, local governments need to be more creative in facilitating economic development projects in their communities. Under the current statute AS 2945050M, it allows municipalities to exempt or defer tax on new economic development properties for up to 5 years with a provisional renewal. HB 370 would remove the five-year restriction and allow municipalities to decide for themselves what exemptions and deferrals would best meet their own priorities. And that's just a little overview of the bill that will be coming forth in the future. So, if there are no objections, I'll take the gavel back. Thank you, Representative Seaton. And we'll hold our questions on that bill, if that's all right with the committee, until we see the bill next time. All right. So hearing no objections, we're going to set that aside with the intentions of bringing it back. And now we will move on to our last item of business for today, which is HB 338 from Representative Seaton. And again, I for committee members, I plan to hold the bill for future hearing. We'll hear the sponsor's presentation and take questions from the committee, and begin the public testimony as time allows. So, if Representative Seaton, yes, we need the sponsor. Right. The sponsors provided a CS for our consideration, and it is my understanding that the sponsor's presentation is going to speak to the CS. Is that correct? So I'd entertain a motion to adopt the CS for discussion purposes.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt CSHB 338-29-LS-1335/P, I believe it is P, as the working document.
And I will object for purposes of discussion. So Representative Seaton, you're already forward, so please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation on the CS that we have before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Paul Seaton from Homer, representing District 31, the lower portion of the Kenai Peninsula. And with me, I have my staff.
Jenny Martin. For the record, I'm Jenny Martin. I'm staff for Representative Paul Seaton.
And thank you very much for coming forward with initial hearing on this bill. The House Bill 338, why is this bill needed? And I wanted to make sure that everyone knew that they had a copy of the PowerPoint presentation in their booklet as well. We have a large budget deficit, and last year I was talking with the city of Homer when they were starting to do their budget, and I advised them that they should not consider, or they should consider their budget without getting revenue sharing, because at some point in the budgetary process, that might disappear, put them at risk, and I think most municipalities across the state were aware that with a $3.2 billion deficit, we had a real problem. We came down here, and it was 3.8 by that time, and with the rollout last Monday, we are now $4.1 billion deficit with lower oil prices, lower, and higher credit. So that's the big problem, is municipalities will continue to see further reductions in state funding for vital services in their communities. And to balance their budget, they need flexibility, how to address their taxes. And currently what we have is a statute that is an unfunded mandate from the state that they must exempt a certain amount of property tax from valuation. And that has changed over time. So what I want to do is run through with the committee exactly what the history is. It started in 1972 when this property tax exemption came in, and it was only for those, it was needs-based, those with under $10,000 gross annual income, and that applied to 100% of the property tax for those individuals. And as things generally happen in the legislature, if there's an idea that addresses a problem, it seems to be a good, it gets expanded. And so the following year it got expanded to all seniors, took off the needs base. And I'm going to go to the next slide, that's slide number four, to walk through this process with you. So there's 1973 was the first year when it was in effect. There were less than 1,000 seniors qualified. It was $197,000 was the exemption, and the state had agreed to fully fund and compensate the municipalities. So as you can see in that right-hand column, there was no impact on municipal budgets because the state compensated the municipality for their lost taxes. And then you go forward to the next year, and the needs base was removed, and it more than doubled the number of participants, and we went up to about three times the amount of money, and still no impact on communities and municipalities because it was compensated by the state. And then 1980 again, you see by that time, moving forward a few years, we're now 3,300 people participating in it, but now we're almost $2 million in tax not paid, but the state compensated municipalities, so still we are not impacting local municipalities. 1985, it got expanded again for disabled vets and surviving spouses, and now we've jumped to $4 million. Again, no impact to municipalities because the state was following its commitment to reimburse the municipalities. However, when you go to the next year, what you find is that the state said that they're only going to reimburse on $150,000 property instead of an unlimited amount. But what was happening was, as you can see, the number of participants climbed again. By 1990, we had 8,000 participants, $8 million in taxes, but now we are only, the state is only paying $2.5 million of that, and the cities are having to pick up $6 million. And so now we are just looking at five-year increments here, so you can see that the participants have grown by to 15,000 in 2000, 21,000 in 2005, 27 in 2010, and 35,000 in 2015. So that's the left-hand column number of participants. And now we are up to $66 million, of which the state compensates the municipalities nothing, and $66 million is the shortfall to the municipalities. So this is the problem that we're looking at as far as the state unfunded mandate. And the question was, should we address that so that local municipalities have more local control? And the if we want to look at some of the municipalities individually, this is the, you can go to the department's website and pull up every municipality. But as you can see, this is basically $26 million of foregone revenue, property tax revenue in the municipality of Anchorage. You have $9 million in Fairbanks, another $9 million in the Mat-Su, and $5 million in Kenai, Juneau is over $2 million. So these are the individual borough or municipality foregone revenue from this state unfunded mandate. Now, if we look at what some of those increasing costs that I was talking about, this slide, which is slide number 6, is looking at the structure of the community municipal revenue sharing program instituted in 2013. We funded $180 million into a fund that would generate money, and one-third of that would be used each year. The idea was that if we put in $60 million each year, I took out $60 million, one-third of the fund, then the fund would continue along and we could supply communities and municipalities with some revenue sharing. And, of course, this was in time when we had lots of revenue. The program was built so that if we did not fund the $60 million each year, it would wind down, so a third of the fund would be spent each year. And so if you look at, down at FY15, you'll see that we only put in $52 million, and we had $60 million payout from the previous year, so now we've reduced the balance in the fund slightly. The next year, we put nothing in the fund, and so we took out $57 million. That was a third of the balance, and now the balance has dropped to $115 this year. Excuse me. If we put in nothing, that will be a distribution of $38 million, but the fund drops to $76. There would be one more payout of $25 million unless we're recapitalizing the fund. And part of the program is if the fund has less than $60 million in it, nothing gets paid. So we're looking at FY19 being no community or municipal revenue payouts to help support communities if the current statute stays in effect. So if we go forward and look at what are some of the other increased loads that are being placed on municipalities, you know, we're having cuts to the Department of Transportation, so that's looking at road maintenance equipment, looking at decreased funding for Council on Domestic Violence. Alaska land mobile radios are being more of that being funding being cut, as well as troopers and crime lab services, so municipalities that are going to be responsible for more and more of the issues that were previously funded by the state. So the current statute that we have has three components. First of all, 65 years and older, $150,000 is mandated to be exempt from property tax. That's also for a disabled veteran or for an eligible surviving spouse, and that surviving spouse can be under 60 if the municipality by ordinance puts that into place. And it may, in case of hardship, provide an exemption beyond the first $150,000 of assessed valuation. So if we go to House Bill 338, which is the statute that we, or the bill that we have here, what are the changes? We're looking at moving the 65 year and older category down to the optional category. It doesn't remove it, it just moves it to the optional category, and it removes the approved by voters because the idea of mandates on states or on municipalities, governments, of how they construct their tax system should be left up to them. They have votes, they have voters, they have public processes they have to go through, and there's also a lot of involvement by seniors in the election process and testimony at all, et cetera. So the other part of this is all or part of the assessed valuation could be exempt for those who are 65 or older or their surviving eligible spouse. And also going back to the original intent of the bill, a municipality may have the exemption based on hardship or need. So this is going back to the original bill that was passed in 1972. It was all or part, could be restricted, not a certain amount, and the municipality could basis on need. Now, when we talk, let me go to the next slide, because the current senior property tax exemption is the first $150,000, and under this bill that will remain in a municipal ordinance until and unless it's removed or changed by the municipality. Municipality could increase that amount or they could decrease that amount, and municipalities have done both. I'm from the Kenai Peninsula Borough. The Kenai Peninsula Borough has an additional $150,000. And so if you're living outside of one of the cities, there's a $300,000 exemption on the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Some people have said, well, if it's optional, people will take it away. That hasn't been the case. Optionalities have been put in and have not been removed on the Kenai Peninsula Borough anyway. And then the municipality can decide to make it based on hardship if they desire, just like the first one was. However, we're not specifying what hardship level there is. That could be tied to the income levels that are already established, like with the senior benefit program. And so a municipality wouldn't have to come in and redesign a system, or it could be based on one of the other systems, such as the senior fuel, fuel tax reimbursement, which is based on both income and an asset test. So this would be less up to the individual communities. And so that is pretty much what House Bill 338 does. It removes the unfunded mandate on municipalities from the state. It gives the municipalities the ability to balance their own budgets, which meets the needs of their communities, because all of these communities have different demographics. And we also, part of the needs-based portion that is allowed is that, you know, the senior population is quite bimodal. We have a number of seniors who don't have a lot of income, don't have a lot of assets, are in the areas where they're getting the senior benefit program or other exemptions. And then we have the other group of seniors, which are the wealthiest in the state. As a demographic group, seniors have more wealth than any other demographic group in the state. That's just, and that's the way it is across the nation. Of course, we've had, you know, 65 plus years to accumulate wealth, pay off bills, acquire things. And so a municipality may want to look at how do we support the seniors that need this property tax exemption. And we want to say, yeah, the younger folks are going to have to pay higher taxes because we really need to support our senior group. And then we have a whole other group of seniors that are the wealthiest in our communities. And the question is for a municipality to decide, should we be taxing the younger folks in our communities at a greater level to provide this unneeded support to the wealthiest in the community? So this is trying to give the flexibility and the ability of municipalities to devise their own tax systems, whether those are sales taxes, whether those are property taxes, for their individual community. And so I guess, Madam Chair, that's pretty much the roundup of the bill. I can discuss, you know, the changes, but we really have discussed both the changes here. So entertain any questions you have.
Okay. With that, I'll remove my objection and ask for questions from the committee. Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you go up one slide, perhaps? I want to ask a question about the bottom bullet. Right now, are we not excluding the 150 from the calculation of the municipality's local contribution?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Hughes. I'm not focusing very well on with my eyes here on this. I had forgot to talk about that. Right now, what happens is $150,000 of this property tax exemption is excluded from the 2.6 mils calculation of property value for the required local effort. So that's excluded, and this bill maintains that exclusion. So it will not change anything for the municipalities. In an earlier version, we were looking at the bill and saying, oh, well, that would increase the property tax value, but then it turned out it was just a shifting of funds, and we didn't want to do that. So what this bill does, it maintains $150,000, is excluded from the calculation, just like it is right now.
And as follow-up?
Representative Hughes.
And so if a local municipality has chosen to add to that amount, like you had mentioned in the Kenai Borough, that the anything optional that they've done is not excluded from the calculation, is that correct?
Madam, through the chair, that's correct. It's not, the optional parts are not, but this will put in the statute that the 150 will be continued to be excluded from calculation for the required local effort for education.
Okay. Another question.
Representative Hughes.
Representative Seaton, I remember back in, as a younger person, back in the 70s, 80s, that it seemed pretty rare that grandparents stuck around, and they often moved out of state. When I looked at the timeline and when we put this in place, that started to shift, and we seem like we have our wonderful, wise, older generation sticking around with us more. Have you looked at all at what might happen in communities if this is lifted, and what might happen? I know they are a huge part of the economics of our state, and because they're on fixed income, lifting this, I'm wondering, I don't know how much, in fact, you might be able to tell us, Mike, what kind of difference it might make. Are we talking $3,000 or $4,000 on average a year this person might have to pay if this is lifted? Can you just talk about how it might impact the local communities and whether the seniors will stick around and what they'd have to pay in order to stick around? And if a community chose to exercise this, if this bill were to pass and a community chose to exercise it.
And through the chair, thank you for that, Representative Hughes. Yes, I do want to clarify, make sure everybody understands, this does not lift the $150,000. In fact, it specifically says that the $150,000 is in there unless a community decides that it is going to lower that amount or raise that amount. It can do which either. But the $150,000 is not taken away by this bill. It just gives back to the local community, and that's going to probably depend on its demographics. I mean, I have a community in Homer that has a very large senior population. Mm-hmm. A lot of tax base is off the books. You have all the nonprofits, you have all the churches, you have all of those things, and you have the first $150,000 of all the seniors. And so the question is, again, would a municipality carte blanche take away the $150,000? I doubt it. You talked about people on fixed income, but many seniors are not on fixed income. They have a, they're still participating, some of them, in the workforce. I mean, I'm one of those. And others have businesses that they are running at one aspect or another. And so the idea that all seniors are on fixed income and don't have assets or don't have income is not correct. This particular program says that there's $150,000 exempted regardless of your status. You can have a $6 million home and you get the $150,000. Now, a person wouldn't have to apply, but most people say there's a benefit that is available to me by the legislature, and I'm going to take it. I mean, that's one of the reasons why they're the group that's in the wealthy group is in the wealthy group, is they take advantages of the programs that are offered. And so it would be very definitely an individual community. Often communities, like if you're in the borough, it's 3.5 mils in the to the borough. There's also a portion of the municipal, of this exemption, also applies to service areas. So the hospital service area, the fire service area, all of a sudden they don't get a millage on their service area because the first $150,000 is excluded. So it's really hard on service areas in some aspects, and it depends on the valuation of the homes as to how big a problem that is. So it's an individual community decision. It's an individual community impact. And it's going to depend on what the borough and the city, if you're inside a city, what the total millage rate is. I mean, if you're at 3 mils, if you're at 7 mils total, it's going to be twice as much as if you're at 3 mils.
Let's follow up.
It is follow-up.
Okay. Representative Hughes.
I appreciate you continued to explain why your bill, as you see it, is a good idea, but I don't feel like my question was answered. My question basically was, have you looked at to see if there would be a trend, just as we had a trend when this came into place where seniors stayed in the state, are we going to see a trend of an outflux of seniors? And secondly, what would be understanding the valuation of homes is different across the state, and the mill rate and all of that, but what would be the typical amount, the average amount if a community chose to exercise this, so if that were to happen, what would we expect that cost difference per senior to be on average, and what do we expect the trend to be as far as seniors staying or leaving the state?
Sure, and we have the state assessor on the line, Madam Chair, but it's very difficult to say. I mean, some cities have a senior tax exemption card, and so for sales tax, for the local sales tax, and other ones don't. I can't tell you whether everybody left all the cities that didn't have senior sales tax exemption. Whether a municipality would decide to do this needs-based, or whether they would decide to reduce it or expand it, those are options that are going to have to be chosen. But we do have the state assessor online, and in the chart number 5, I guess we can go back up to and
We do have Marty McGee, the state assessor, on the line. Representative Hughes, would you like me to go ahead? I'll go ahead and have him.
Yes,
online.
Yes.
Mr. McGee, if you're online, could you please answer Representative Hughes' question?
Darren, this is Marty McGee. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please continue.
I don't have any data to specifically answer the question as to the impact of changing the senior citizen exemption. Whether people would leave or not, I have no data to be able to respond to that question. Where we have seen changes in the sales tax, and there have not been many of those, there has not been a significant change in the population or out-migration.
Follow up?
Representative Hughes, follow-up.
Do you have any sense of what the average amount might be if across the state this were exercised in communities, the difference in a senior's tax bill?
The impact on the tax bill is directly related to the tax rate for each community, and they vary quite a bit, so there's no universal answer for the impact across the state. The tax rates are for each community are published in the Alaska taxable document, so that information is available. It's not in the thousands of dollars typically for most communities and most homes that would be affected by this by a change, but it's again difficult to give a specific answer to that question.
Thank you.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Seaton, for this inexperienced legislator, could you go back and explain to me a little bit more clearly as to the impact when we're talking about, I'm referring to, I think, a slide forward, HB 33, it changes down at the bottom. Representative Hughes asked about excluding the first $150,000 of an optional senior property tax exemption. That particular line, could you tell me what the impact of that is on how local communities fund schools? I mean, can explain a little bit more clearly to me, if you would.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, their schools are funded with what's called required local effort. So a 100% of the tax base is used that is taxable under state law. So under state law, this $150,000 mandatory is exempt. So you take 100% of the valuation, and then you remove the portion that's non-taxable under state law, and then 2.65 mils times that tax base is the required local effort. That amount is subtracted from the basic need for that's established, and the state basically pays the rest, and the local community is responsible for doing that. There is no community that we've been able to find that only funds at that level. They all fund above the required local effort level, the 2.65 mils. Does that answer your question?
It does. And just for a
second question, Representative.
So if we were to adopt HB 338, it would remove that. It would remove that exemption, and then it would the effect of it would raise the minimum cap. The minimum contribution, not the cap, but the minimum contribution for communities. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that's incorrect.
Okay.
That was correct in a previous version of the bill, and then we found this interaction with schools, and so this bill has, I believe it's Section 4, which specifically keeps in place the 150, and it keeps it across the entire state, whether a community removes the exemption or not. So the 150 is still in place to maintain this basic fairness and basic same structure across the entire state for school funding. So, Madam Chair, just a little clearer explanation of if I
have seen.
Because I got wrapped up there probably. The $150,000 exemption is maintained in the bill for being exempt from the calculation for schools, so it would be exactly the same as it is right now.
Follow up, Representative Ortiz?
Brief at ease.
And we're back on the record. Representative Ortiz, are you?
Thank you. I'm good. Thanks.
All right. Representative Seaton, if we can just back up to Representative Hughes's question about what the impact would be on the seniors. If you divide the number of applicants by the exempted tax, it looks like for the MOA it would be about $2,100. Does that and about $1,900 for the Matsu Borough? If you could provide the committee maybe with just kind of a, it doesn't have to be every community in the state, but maybe an idea across the state of what that impact would be.
We'd be happy to do that at the next hearing.
We appreciate that. Thank you. Any other questions? Right away. Okay. I think in the to honor those who have come here to testify and those who we have online, we're going to go ahead and stop our committee questions and go ahead and start with public testimony. So I am going to open the public testimony. We do have people here in the room and some that can't return, so I'm going to go ahead and start with those of you who have come to sit in this morning and have waited patiently. Aron Somerville, if you could please come forward and put your name on the record, your affiliation, we appreciate it. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ron Somerville. I live here in Juneau. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I grew up in Craig, the great metropolis of Craig. I'd like to give you a little different perspective, and all due respect to Representative Seaton. You know, I've worked on a lot of legislation. This one, I think we're going to disagree, not necessarily on one aspect. And I'm speaking for myself, although I'm part of a senior group here of about 55 people getting together and looking at the senior issues as it relates to Alaska. And I want to echo what Representative Hughes just said. When I grew up in Craig, when people retired, they left. They went to Seattle. I'm talking about Native, non-Natives alike. Most of them did not retire in Alaska. They couldn't afford it. And I think if you look at what's happened in the state, and I encourage you to do that, and I want to say right up front, I'm against unfunded mandates. I'm a states' rights from way back. I don't like the federal government's telling us to do things and then taking the money away from us. So this is hard for me, but I think we need to look at the total impact of what is being proposed here. And that's the context where I'd like to make my presentation. And I have to use Juneau as an example. Just recently, Juneau took on the tax exemption for seniors. Sales tax, and they taxed one segment of the community, one segment in raising money that was seniors, because they're easy, they're vulnerable, and we talk about seniors and as of low income and rich. I hate to tell everybody, but there's a whole bunch of us in the middle here. And even though there were concessions made for low income, and I appreciate that, supported that, the problem was that they had a cutoff at $50,000. Well, the changes they made in the sales tax here in Juneau amounts to between $500 and $1,000 a year, probably for non-essential items, they call it. Food's still covered, but the non-essential items, if you do anything in your house, you buy a car and all these things, it has a high 5% tax rate here in Juneau. And so that, you know, you say, well, you know, we probably can find $500 in our budget. But most of the seniors can't look at it just that way, because they're looking at it the same way you people are. They're saying, they're going to take away my permanent fund dividend check. And part of that's going to probably happen this year, next year, whatever it might be. Now we're talking about taking away the $150,000 property tax exemption. Or we're just going to send it back to the communities. And I respect that, but we look at it from Juneau's standpoint. There's only one reason our assembly is asking you to do this, because they want to take it away from the seniors. Why would you ask to have the option if you didn't want to take it away? And so I guess that bothers me. Anyway, I think the legislature also needs to be aware that they help create some of this problem. You've given the municipalities a lot of money. And we have two schools here, two high schools here with 30,000 people. We have three libraries. We have two swimming pools. They're going to build an island out here in Gastineau Channel to put a bronze whale on it. Our assembly has gone over the top as far as we're concerned in terms of fiscal planning. And so when they turn around and say, well, gee, we're going to have a shortfall here, who do they attack? Seniors. So we're taking it kind of personal. And we don't trust our assembly. We just had a very contentious mayor's election, and the seniors back, most of the seniors back the person that was elected fairly significantly. And there's a reason for that. We don't trust our assembly. So that isn't your problem. That's our problem. There is some options here that I wish you'd look at. Petersburg took up the senior sales tax issue this last year. They did one thing. They put it up to the voters. The voters rejected it. If, in fact, something with seniors that you all recognize, certainly Representative Seaton does, he's a senior like the rest of us, understands the value of these, but there are, some of these have long-term implications. And if you don't want to discourage, or you want to encourage seniors to live in Alaska, in their communities, this is just going to be part of a system that is going to discourage them from living. That's my opinion. There is an option here, though. You could grandfather the people who are in the system. You probably won't want to do that because you take away that option from the municipality, but that is an option you could do. The other is require that they have a vote of the people. If nothing else you do, if this passes, please require the municipalities to put it up to the public to vote on it. At least we deserve that option available to us. Anyway, I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I'm sorry we're leaving next week and we'll go see my daughter in Albany, Oregon.
Thank you, Mr. Somerville. Would you entertain a question from the committee? Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here, Mr. Somerville. And before I give you my question, let me state that I hear clearly your comments and I'm very much concerned about as our state moves through this tough fiscal situation, I'm very much concerned that that we are leaving our seniors in a tougher situation than where they have been, and I don't think it's a suitable situation. I don't think that's good because they play such a key role in our economy, and they play they're our treasure. They're our history. They're our culture. They're just so important to us. With that said, don't you think that if we were to adopt this HB 338, that the municipalities themselves, you know, would recognize the importance that seniors play and would have to really do some heavy consideration before they would ever remove the exemption on that first $150,000 or whatever, because they understand the economic impact that seniors play in the economy. They understand the value of keeping seniors in the community, and I think they'd be slow to get rid of this exemption based on those calculations, but it would give them the ability to make that decision at the local level. What do you think about that?
You know, philosophically, I don't disagree with you. I guess we're looking at it from a practical standpoint. In Juneau, our assembly is we have a housing problem here, and some people said, well, if we get rid of seniors, then we'll have more houses available. but I see, you know, friends here in the community that are already, based upon what they're projecting here, going to be moving back to the villages because they can't afford. They're going to leave their kids and their grandkids here and move back to the villages. Even though it's more expensive to live in the villages, they have a community support system. So in the long term, it's cheaper for them. They don't have the high cost of living in many cases. So, you know, I agree philosophically that the assembly should take that into consideration. I don't think our assembly will. And I guess why would anybody object into requiring the citizens make that decision? That's my suggestion as well. If we're going to change this, I guess my last point I'd like to make is when I talk to seniors, the senior center down here, we go down, we're talking about this issue early on the sales tax thing, and Nobody said, hey, I'm willing to step up to the plate if it's part of a plan. In other words, just increasing taxes on seniors didn't seem very fair to most of them. But if you had, okay, this year and next year, here's our plan is going to be for raising money to keep whatever sensibility and funding for this community, most of them said, well, we'd swallow hard and we'd try to do that, as long as everybody was pitching in. But we're not seeing that. Seniors are easy, and what, you know, we depend on, because we've had a free ride in many cases. I agree with that. There's a lot of benefits for seniors, but we made the decision to retire here based upon the financial system available to us at the time. And again, back to the point, I think most people would, if they knew what's going to happen, they would have not decided to retire here.
Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Somerville, thank you for coming today. I really appreciate it. I feel like we are so far removed from our communities, and it's very difficult to reach our seniors. A lot of them are not on Facebook, which is our easy way to communicate. And when we send out a newsletter, it's so expensive that it's so hard to reach our community. So it is a true privilege. I'm very grateful that you came today, and I want to thank you. What my question to you is the name of your group, I'd love to know the group that you meet with. And is there any way, do you guys do any formal resolutions or anything like that? Because you are a voice that could represent a lot of other voices. Like, my seniors have no idea we're even talking about this bill right now and don't have the opportunity to come to Juneau to present this. So I'm just wondering, you know, to present their concerns. So is there any way you guys can get a resolution from a wider voice to state your concerns,
well,
in regards to this?
If you take through the chair to Representative Reinbold, there are certain ways of doing that, and I'll use the election we just had. We took the senior sales tax exemption cards, the list we got from the city. They wouldn't give us the addresses, so we went to the permanent fund dividend. You transcribe those addresses onto those same people, you get the addresses. So there are ways of putting the citizens together, because you look at the city rolls on sales tax exemptions, and or their applications for the $150,000, like Representative Seaton said, you got to apply for it. And you take that, you can develop a list of seniors, which we now have in Juneau, about 2,700 places that we can send things to at a very cheap rate of getting to them. Other than that, our group is just a group of seniors. We just call it Juneau Senior Citizens. I started a web page, and on that web page, we have suggested ways they might get some of that money back that they've just lost now to the municipality, and, you know, they can. We've gone to the businesses, a number of businesses said, hey, we'll give seniors a tax exemption, or, you know, give them a discount on their purchases. And so we've been listing that in our webpage. And we can see people are going to that and checking it out to see what new businesses are offering tax discounts to seniors. So that's one way we've been able to do it. But we're not a formal group. We're not incorporated. We're not a 501c3 or 501c4. We're just interested. Seniors are concerned. I went to the Catholic Community Services Group. About 50 to 60% of their programs are handled by seniors. If seniors quit volunteering in this community, a good part of the programs in this community would stop. And they, mainly because seniors have time. Representative Seaton does, because he works. They like this community. They like Alaska. You know, I'm a lifelong Alaskan, and I have a hard time dragging my wife even away from here, and she's from Massachusetts. and we don't want to leave, but, you know, you have to consider these financial things. I just, all I'm getting at is, please look at this from a broad spectrum. I don't oppose getting rid of an unfunded mandate. I don't. But I do oppose doing it in the context of only picking on seniors. Don't do that. You know, if they're going to be part of a larger taxing program or a larger fundraising program, I'd support it. I'm sorry.
No. Thank you for being here. And I do believe we have one last question from Representative Hughes.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. It's actually two really brief questions, and I echo Representative Reinbold. It's really good to have you here in the room since we're so far from home. We appreciate it. Just wondering if the money that you would I'm wondering how you and the typical senior here in Juneau might spend their money otherwise if the exemption were removed, the couple thousand or whatever it might be for you that would then go to the city and borough of Juneau, where would that money be going otherwise? I'm just wondering if it would be supporting local business or how that might work, so we understand the impact if a local community would choose to exercise the option.
Thank you, Representative Hughes, through the chair. Well, when we discussed that, almost every senior, and we didn't have many rich seniors in our group, by the way. They're all kind of middle class. And everybody said, we're just going to shift it from the local businesses to the, we're going to move money from the local businesses to the municipality. That's, unless you're sitting there with a discretionary fund available, what other option do you have? You have to stop doing something. So what you do is you just don't buy something or you shift money. And what we've done in our recommendation on our website to say, well, the other option you have is to shop in Seattle or Anchorage that don't have sales taxes. You know, but I've heard most seniors said, I'll never buy a car in Juneau again. I can't afford to because the loss of the sales tax means I just can't buy one here. Does that make sense?
Yes, and thank you. And my second quick question?
Representative Hughes.
Yeah, and I that was my gut feeling, so thank you for confirming that. The other thing I was wondering, since you're involved with the senior group here and you know what the senior services and things that are happening in this community, if one community were to exercise it and one weren't, it's possible that some seniors might move to the community that hasn't exercised it. And I was just wondering if that might put a strain on the senior services in a community if one community that would end up with a lot of seniors because they've got the tax exemption. Do you think that would be a problem knowing what the senior infrastructure support infrastructure is here? Would that, do you think that could potentially be a consequence if one community would exempt and another wouldn't? Would
Representative Hughes, through the chair. I got to admit, Petersburg's looking a lot better right now. Having come from Craig, will Petersburg be a step up? I don't know how much of that would occur. I would think most of the people kind of get, seniors in particular, kind of orient around family. And they're going to stick it out with family as long as they can. I think the tendency would be to move out of state.
Okay, thank you.
That's just my personal opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Somerville. I appreciate your being here. And we always welcome testimony and written testimony to your legislators and calls as well. So you can let your senior group know that.
Thank you. I didn't really realize this was up today until yesterday, so I apologize.
No worries. We appreciate you being here. And if committee members would just be thoughtful in their questions, I know we want to have a large discussion, but this is the time for the public testimony, so I we can entertain some questions, but let's just be thoughtful in the time, and we do have several people online waiting to testify, and I hate to limit the time limit, but if we could be concise in our comments and maybe keep them to about 3 minutes, that would really be appreciated. I know, I'm sorry. So next we have Kathy, is it Boutine? Please come forward and put yourself on the record.
Mm-hmm. I'm Kathy Boutin. My husband's fault for the French pronunciation of the name.
My apologies.
Oh, no worries. It happens a lot. Thank you, Representative Tilden and members. I appreciate the time, and I'll try to be brief. I've lived in Alaska since 1982 and in Juneau since 32 years now. We've seen a lot of changes over the years, and the problem with Juneau is that we really like fancy things, at least the Assembly does. We built a second high school when the population of high schoolers was decreasing. We built a fancy new pool when we had a great pool downtown. We have great Eagle Crest and had good facilities, but we bonded for an extra new building. And the spending goes on. So we have an Assembly that really likes to spend, and they've decided that the seniors are the best place to find money from. Nobody else in Juneau, just the seniors. So they decided to limit the tax exemptions. And so what we're faced with now is fancy everything, and we go to the checkout line at one of the local box stores or anywhere, and you have to separate what you eat in your mouth, that's SNAP food, for those of you who don't know what SNAP is, that's a government program, from everything else. And we were told, oh, that's really not going to be much, this other pile. It turns out to be quite a bit if you buy locally. Notice I said if. So we've discovered that many seniors are objecting to this. And instead of buying locally, we buy on Amazon. I don't want to buy on Amazon. But, you know, we are on fixed income, which means the base stays the same every year.
cost of inflation goes up on everything, garbage, sewer, water, you name it. And so we say, how can I save money? I'm going to order Amazon. We have six baby chicks. Adorable. They go through a lot of food. Do I buy locally? No, I don't. We buy chicken food on Amazon because, quite frankly, we look out for our bottom line. We always have. So while the folks in Juneau decided that we folks on moderate income can go ahead and spend whatever we want to, people who move right into Juneau very short time before some artificial deadline get $650 a year just for moving to Juneau, whether they've spent money here or not, because that's an income-based subsidy. So while you're taking from one hand the moderate folks, you're giving away to other people who may have lived here a very short time. I ask you, is that what you really want to happen? I object to this HBL 338 because I can see the future. What's going to start now is going to generate into something that's unintended, just like what the Assembly in Juneau did to the seniors here. Please reconsider this and don't send this bill anywhere. Thank you.
Mr. Tame, would you mind a question? Representative Rimbaud.
Thank you, Chair Tilton. I will be quick. Once again, thank you for your testimony. It means a lot. My question to you is, do you mind just telling us that program about the 650? I wasn't aware of that program, and what group is getting that?
It's income-based, and it's according to the household income. And if it's determined that it's X amount of income per household, then those people may apply at the city office for a rebate. And the way I understood it last was you could move into a town for maybe a month and apply for this, depending on the time of year you move in. So hypothetically, you could spend no money in Juneau on sales tax and apply for the $650 amount and get that as your bonus coming into town.
And through the chair, I'd like to get information on that program at a future time.
Okay. Yeah. If you could maybe meet with myself or my staff and we can go through that program so that we can get more information back to Representative Rimbaud, I'd appreciate it.
I'd be happy to. Thank you.
Oh, great. Thank you so much, and thanks for your testimony.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
So next we have Loretta, Loretta, I'm going to have you put yourself on your record and say your last name. Yes.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning,
all the people. My name is Loretta Bevegni. I live here in Juneau. I've been here since 1963, 54 years. And I oppose Bill number 338. It's based on specious reasoning. We don't need it. The program is working fine just as it is. I would like to see it left as it is. Actually, I consider this a declaration of war on senior citizens in the state of Alaska and the veterans. This is unnecessary. And I don't want to keep going with it. I just wish that it would stay right here and never see another light of day. And in addition, I would like one of you to step forward and present a new bill in favor of this tax exemption for seniors, and instead of the $150,000, put it at $250,000, so that the municipalities cannot fiddle with what is already in law. We don't need it. It's fine. That's all I have to say. I do not support this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. We are now going to go ahead and move to people who have been waiting patiently online. First, we'll move to the Homer Elio. Yes.
I didn't sign up, but I want to answer some of her questions.
Okay. Can you state for a little bit? And
yes.
Okay. Thank you. I will come back to you here in just a little bit. Let's move to some of the people who've been waiting online for about an hour or so. And I appreciate you waiting patiently. We're going to move to the Homer LAO to Wayne Adderhold. Mr. Adderhold, if you put your name on the record and...
Can you hear us?
Barely.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. I'm Wayne Adderhold. I'm representing myself and Chair Tilton. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and Representative Seaton, I appreciate your courage in introducing this bill. I'm a senior currently receiving this exemption starting last year. It's really nice. I'd love to think I could that it was okay to keep it, but and I voted for the exemption when it first came up. I've been in the state since 74. And I plan to stay here regardless of the status of the exemption. But I can't support it any longer. I think it's unfair and unsustainable. If I don't pay, someone else has to make up the difference. And it's an unfunded mandate. So I support this bill as a first step so municipalities can decide. And I do trust my municipal council. We need to eliminate an unfunded mandate. I agree with a lot of the comments from Mr. Somerville that we all need to be in this together. I think that's the key to getting past this. There's a lot of misinformation going around about seniors being a burden, and I haven't heard that said. I think some spin has been put on that by newspapers and people that are against the change, but the burden is on the people that are trying to balance budgets. Representative Seaton mentioned in his presentation, I've been following this for like 15 years, and when I first saw it come up in the Borough Assembly when I was up there on business, and I was pretty amazed, and I started paying attention. In 2009, the Pew Research put out a report about the rising age gap in economic well-being. I think rather than just looking at income, we need to look at net worth. Over a 25-year period from 1984 to 2009, which is roughly the period that this has been in existence, the over 65 portion are doing 42% better than they were 25 years before that. The younger than 35 portion are doing 68% worse, an obvious trend in net worth, which is very meaningful in ability to pay. So I think the fixed income argument is very misleading. I think we need to focus on net worth. And I understand there are a lot of people in the middle who are counting on this, and the bad thing is that people have been counting on it for so long, it's hard to take it away. And I'll tell you, when I opened that envelope last year and looked at those numbers, I go, this is really nice. And my personal decision at that time was to share it with my daughter and her husband, who are not doing so well. You know, they're trying to make it. And we need a mix of everybody in the state, all age groups. So that's what I think we need to be focusing on. Article 1 of the Constitution, the last sentence says that all persons are equal and entitled to equal rights, opportunities, and protection under the law, and that all persons have corresponding obligations to the people and to the state. So let's keep everything on the table. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Adderhold. Next will be Katie Coaster. And then after Katie will be Janet Goering.
Thank you. Katie Kester, and I'm the city manager for Homer, and I'm representing the city of Homer. You should have a resolution in your packet supporting this legislation from the city. I think that House Bill 338 is an important tool for municipalities to have in their toolbox to raise revenue. It will, as we look at declining revenue, the municipalities are going to be facing the same struggles that the state is facing. And I really appreciate that the tenor of this conversation is, you know, we're all governments and we're all trying to provide service for our constituents, the state and the municipalities. And we are facing the same issues the state is facing. And just like the state is having to look at a diverse plan for facing those challenges, there's no way that the city of Homer, for example, could balance our budget on the backs of seniors because it's about $275,000 in senior property tax exemption that we receive. And in Homer, we have a 4.5% mill rate, so that's $675 per senior. Seniors are a very important part of our economy. Not only do they bring in new money to the economy through their pensions, they volunteer. I'm in the room with seniors that I'm on with in volunteer organizations with that are my friends. The municipalities are going to have these difficult conversations with their neighbors, with their friends, on how to structure a senior property tax exemption. Do you make it needs-based? Do you make it $100,000? Where is the balance for each community? And the city of Homer is just asking that we be given that tool as a community. We're having to face the difficult fiscal challenges ahead. And we've had to make cuts, and I think we're going to have to face even more severe cuts as we look into the future. And we are going to have to do this together as a community and not targeting one group. I had a council member say, and she was kind of upset about the conversation surrounding the senior property tax exemption. Why does this conversation always target seniors as poor? We are not a poor group. We are not poor people. There are poor seniors. But she was kind of a bit incensed that all seniors get painted as poor, and that was insulting to her. So I just ask that you give local control back to the municipalities on this issue, and it will be a difficult conversation in every community. Thank you.
Thank you. Janet Goringer?
Yes. Janet Goringer here in Homer. I personally do not support this bill, as we did not get any increase in our Social Security, so I'm not at the top of the ladder when it comes to monies. My husband and I have lived here almost 7 years, and we knew nothing about what was available to seniors. But our council calls us a burden, and which irritated me no end. And I'm just concerned that the monies will come back to the municipality. We will have no say because we won't have a vote, and things are done sort of behind our back, just like nobody knows about what's going on right now. So I just feel that we seniors are out in the left field right now, and it needs to be revamped, and I don't know exactly how, but I'm really upset about this.
Thank you, Ms. Goringer. Next we'll have Diana Hughes, or Diane, sorry.
Hi. I live in Homer. My name is Diane Hughes, and I've kind of written down some notes here, so I may be jumping around a little bit, but I wanted to cover everything as quickly as I could. My understanding is that the state, borough, and city employees enjoy benefit packages of health and dental that 95% of the taxpaying citizenship could never afford. I suggest that we find the dollars that we need by asking those groups of government employees and retirees to come forward and offer to give back some of the benefits that were given to them in the very lucrative times before. I see nothing offered by government employees to move forward. Are all of our government employees in worse conditions than widows and people living on Social Security? I don't think so. So that's my first suggestion. I think it's morally reprehensible for you to even consider taking tax benefits against widows and disabled people without checking into your government employees. My God, in this town of Homer, most of the people here are government retirees or current government employees. And if you look about this town and look at these seniors that are retired from government, you will see that they are the most affluent people in town. So Lawrence Kotlikoff, who is a famous economist nationwide, has said that 80% of seniors live on Social Security alone. They do not have retirement. So my suggestion is that government employees stand up and stop having us all share in the tax penalties and have them pick up the ball and run with it. I'm tired. We are the taxpaying community. Why is it incumbent upon us to pay for the mistakes that the legislature has made? You know, it's time. It's time for government to suck it up. It's not fair. So in addition, I suggest that we postpone the decision on making this optional tax, which isn't optional. Every member of our city council in Homer voted to remove the senior tax benefit. You know, that I don't have to think past this bill passing. I know that our city will go for the senior dollars. So then, in addition, I think I've covered most of what I think. I don't think it's fair to take the burden and put it on seniors. Look around Homer, for instance. 80% of the people here are not city retirees or government retirees. The government retirees and city employees are the most affluent people in Homer. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hughes, for your comments. Next is Marianne Schlegelmilch.
My name is Marianne Schlegelmilch. I live in Homer. I've lived in Homer for 13 years. I've lived in Alaska since 1980, living in Anchorage, Sitka, Palmer, and now Homer. We had 4 years to decide to retire to Homer. We had no idea about any kind of transportation. It was completely and totally about the view. I'm opposed to this bill. I want to say that I feel that income versus expenditure is a subjective thing. I absolutely do not trust my local government to be fair to seniors. They have said that we're a burden. It is in writing in their resolution 15-111. I think it is unconscionable to disrupt the economics of a vulnerable population. Senior citizens have no ability to recover from an assault on their finances that they planned on when they set up their retirement. They are a vulnerable population. Why disabled veterans are included in this is really beyond me. I'm married to a disabled veteran. The criteria are extremely strict. I left my disabled veteran at home to come and testify here, and I hope that he's safe when I come back home. I don't understand the disabled veterans exemption. I don't understand the senior exemption. I think there's other ways to look for funding. I am concerned about the secretiveness of this and how it came about without any publicity during Christmas break when most people were out of town. Again, I want to say that I think that wealth is subjective. In our particular situation, we have made a conscious decision to retire in Homer after living here for 13 years. We've pulled a lot of equity out of our house and reinvested it. In doing so, we've provided a lot of jobs to this community, and we've tapped into our comfort zone. If we have to move, it's going to cost us a lot of money. But I can assure you that if we move, it will be out of Alaska. Many of our long-term friends who have been in Alaska longer than us are already gone or in the process of leaving. This is wrong to target the seniors. If, in fact, any of you choose to pursue this, House Bill 338, at the very minimum, I think it would only be fair to grandfather in people who have already banked on this and start phasing it in more slowly. Because, as I've said, seniors are vulnerable. They are unable to recover from this for health reasons and fiscal reasons. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We are going to move on now. Is there anybody there at the Homer LAO that hasn't testified?
No, there is not.
Okay, thank you. We're going to go ahead and move on to Ketchikan, Gateway Borough, Scott Brandt Erickson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. Scott Brandt Erickson, I'm the borough attorney for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. Not speaking on behalf of the borough, speaking on my own, but through my job, I am aware of a number of the issues involved in this legislation. I'd like to thank Representative Seaton for offering the legislation. I know that the senior exemption and having some degree of local control, local option, has been a high priority of the Municipal League for a number of years. The particular point that I wanted to comment on regarding the bill is the treatment of the exemption with respect to the required contribution to school funding. The committee substitute addresses this problem in a positive way. It's very important that in any legislation which makes the exemption optional, that optional portion, the $150,000 optional exemption, is not included in the full and true value for calculating the required local contribution. And one of the reasons that this is so important is if that $150,000 in value were treated the same as all other optional exemptions, the result would be to put in communities in a situation where they would feel compelled to tax the seniors in order to avoid losing money. For example, here in Ketchikan, if the legislation was not drafted as the committee substitute has it, it would cost another $323,000 that would be paid by the community without any single dollar of additional benefit to the community. So the committee substitute version P that you're looking at solves this problem, and I would ask that Section 1 of that committee substitute be retained in any version of this bill that goes forward. Once again, thank you, Representative Seaton, for bringing this issue forward.
Thank you. And is there anyone else in Ketchikan, LIO?
No, there's not.
Okay, thank you. We will go ahead and move on to Lois Weir of Wasilla.
I'm here.
Hi, Lois. This is
hi. Hello. I appreciate being notified that the possibility for public hearing on this issue was made available to us today. I'm from Wasilla, and I represent not only myself but all of the many, I should say, I can't say all of them, many of the seniors from the Wasilla Senior Center. This comes as an unpleasant surprise. As some of the other people have already testified, part of my being able to retire in Alaska is based on this. The way the legislation currently is, not the way that it's the effort is being made to change it. I think that it would be a significant detriment to all of the seniors in Alaska, whether they live in Wasilla, Juneau, or even in the bush where you own your own property. I'm to the point now where I have children who are becoming seniors, so this would affect my extended family significantly. And it, as far as it being an optional thing, I'm afraid I also agree with the people who address this particular issue. I don't believe there would be any question as to whether, as to what, how the Mat-Su Borough Assembly would vote, and it would be the seniors would be paying the taxes on their first $100,000 value on their homes, I'd say within the first year. You know, it wouldn't be optional. I think that is basically how it would be across the state. As far as government, there's been a couple of comments that I thought were quite interesting, and that is that many governments seem to have some pretty sophisticated tastes in the way to spend money, and are looking for other ways to garner additional funds to spend some of these things, not just on the necessities, but on the, and not just the frills, but on the mega thrills, mega projects that cost money. The seniors that have testified, a couple of them have said about not being able to have an increase in wages themselves, in their Social Security themselves. The last time I got a raise was 2-3 years ago, and then it was $12 a month. Not very much to be asked to also take on paying the taxes on the first $150,000 valuation of my home. I guess that is about all I have to say today, but thank you for letting me express my not too well thought out speech, but at least I covered most of the points I think I had in mind. Thank you so much to all of you. Representative Tilton and Representative Hughes particularly. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lois. We appreciate your calling in to testify today. That is all that we have online at this moment, so I think we'll move back to the room. Sir, if you'd like to come forward and put your name on the record and your affiliation as well.
Thank you. My name is Gary Parker. I'm a resident of Juneau. I've been here since 1999, came up here with the federal government, worked for the Coast Guard, and retired about 5 years ago. I'm concerned about this mostly from a financial basis. Representative Hughes asked some good questions, which I think I can give you some hard numbers because I crunch numbers. I'm an engineer. And so when I decided to retire up here, I had to make up my mind if I wanted to stay in Alaska, which I dearly love, or do I go south like most federal employees do, because it's much cheaper to live down south. And we've got to recognize that there is a definite surcharge you pay for everything that comes up here. And you see that when you go to Home Depot and you see that the prices here are 20 to 30% higher in that Home Depot than they are for the same things down in the state of Washington. I've done a lot of studies on that. Costco is an exception. Their prices are very similar. They charge a little more for heavy items. In doing that, I looked at, you know, what I had saved. Well, first of all, I'd say my income is moderate. I'm not a wealthy senior, but I'm not poor either. I'm not destitute. I have to watch my money, and it's hopefully I'm going to have to watch her maybe 20 more years. That would be nice. Being on Social Security and a federal retirement, I have a fixed income. It has increased over the last 6 years at an average of 1.2%. Some years they pay COLAs, some years they don't. So it's gone up slightly. That helps. But on the other side, the money that I do have in the bank isn't earning anything anymore. I mean, we went from about the time I was retired where I was getting 5% on CDs, and you can't get 0.2% on a CD now. And the banks are paying nothing. So it's truly a fixed income, and inflation is far outstripping these little COLAs that come along once in a while. So I went through that process, and I looked at it, and I decided I love Alaska, and I want to stay here. Things were going along fine until all of a sudden the city council in Juneau decided that they wanted to change the senior income tax exemption. And I understand their reasoning. I did not support that. I asked a lot of questions about it. What they did was probably most of you are from out of town, and this wasn't done during the legislative season, so you're not familiar with what went ahead, but what they proposed was eliminating it altogether. And then later it finally came out that they on essential items, drugs, groceries, most groceries, not all, heating fuel, electricity, you still don't pay the tax, but everything else you do. So what's that caused people to do? Well, I talked to my friends, and my own experience is I'm now buying out of state. I'm buying expensive items that are shippable to Alaska, and the money's not staying in the local economy. But I have to do that because all of a sudden there's a 5% tax on it there wasn't before. Representative Hughes asked how this would affect me. Well, you know, at the time that happened, I considered, well, is it time to move? I mean, I'm not going to have as good of a standard of living here as I could have elsewhere. Then this comes up. Now, you ask what the impact was per year. In my particular case, I have a house in the valley that's appraised at $272,000. We have about a 10 mil rate here in Juneau. I'm hearing other mills in other parts, and it sounds a lot better, so I think ours is high. That represented about $2,700 a year in property taxes prior to my qualifying for this program 3 years ago. That dropped by $1,500 a year to about $1,200 a year. So that's the financial impact in Juneau. Now, as has been pointed out elsewhere, that would vary in different localities by the millage rate. That comes along, and that says that if this goes through, and I have no doubt, not one doubt at all, because you're leaving it up to the city council or whatever, the borough council, to make the decisions of whether they're going to continue this or not, and not putting it up for public vote, which I would encourage it should be put up for public vote. We'd probably lose anyway, but at least it's worth a try. They're going to pass that so fast it'll make your head spin. And that's going to be another $1,500 and on top of the increased sales taxes, which might be $200 or $300 a year by what I spend in town. Final straw, I got my property evaluation. Okay, so I'm still debating and thinking about that. I got my property evaluation yesterday. They just raised the value of my house from $272,000 to $311,000, a $38,000 increase. I mean, they're hitting me every direction they can. And so I would encourage at a minimum and I understand the state's problem in the funding, and the permanent fund is going to be greatly reduced. That helped a lot, but that's going to go away. We're talking about the potential of an income tax on top of everything else. On my fixed income, I'm probably going to make the decision to leave Alaska. And it's a hard decision to make. I really love it here. But it's just getting too expensive. And I was counting on, and I need these senior benefits, if you want to call them that, to stay here, and I just see them going away, and I do this with a heavy heart, but I just want to express that. Now, did you have any other questions about the potential cost?
I think you answered them very well.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the room who would like to testify? Okay, at this time, I'm going to go ahead and leave the public testimony open, and we are go ahead and before we close out, we need to formally adopt the CS. So are there any objections to adopting the CS 29-L5? Is that a 51335-P? Hearing and seeing none, we will adopt that as our working document, the CS.
Can I?
Representing the scene.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This was very valuable testimony, both from the municipalities and from the individual seniors, and I really appreciate the opportunity to have this hearing, because that's what we wanted to do, is get the perspectives from across the state. Appreciate holding this here so that we can get further testimony and further impacts, how that goes. I did want to make a correction. There was a couple of comments that the city resolution that you have in your packet says that seniors are a burden, and what it says on the first page, line 40, is that the shift in they're talking about the shift in demographics, because right now it's 12.9 is projected to go in Homer to 24.2% of the population. So the next whereas is, this shift in demographics disproportionately places the burden of providing municipal services on other property owners, and whereas the increased burden particularly harmful to young families and lower income property owners. So just want to make sure that the characterization is that there's a burden, but it's not that seniors are a burden on the community. I also wanted to say that, although we didn't talk about it, a number of communities have a requirement that if you're doing a tax rate change or a tax, anything to do with property taxes, there has to be a local vote of the people, and there's nothing in this bill that overrides that local. It's not in every community. In some communities it is. And so anyway, and there was also some confusion as to whether disabled vets and spouses are affected by this bill and they are not. This simply looks at the group of seniors, the disabled vets, and qualified spouses or qualified surviving spouses are unaffected by the bill. So I just wanted to make sure we cleared up those topics, but I really appreciated everybody's testimony because it's very helpful as we go forward.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. And Representative Hughes, you have a question?
Actually, I'd just like to ask the bill sponsor if he could get a list of the communities around the state where the vote would go to the people. And then also, I just got confused because is this only exempting, if a community were to, the bill were to pass and a community were to choose this, to do this, would it only be for seniors and not for disabled veterans and their spouses?
Representative Seaton.
Through the chair, that's correct. This does not move to the optional category, disabled vets or their surviving spouses. Those are not; those are still mandatory $150,000 exemption in the law and the bill that's proposed here. So it's just moving the senior category to the local option.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments or questions from the committee? Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been listening with great interest, and as a former Anchorage Municipal Assembly member, I've been involved in some of these decisions, and I've been fully aware that the state has not reimbursed for years and years and years. So it's been that $26 million shared burden in Anchorage. We've done a lot to attract seniors over the last 40 years here in Alaska. Many families have the joy of being being living with their grandparents and great-grandparents, and I think we have a lot of tough decisions ahead of us in this legislature as we can see the impact statewide of every single decision that we make on every age group. So thank you for what we heard this morning and heartfelt testimony from many people, and I wish us luck heading into the near future.
I would like to thank everybody who did come in and spend their morning here with us, as well as those who called to testify online, and also to the committee members. This is something that we have to look at, and some of those tough questions, and definitely heartfelt considerations. With that, I will adjourn our meeting at 9:53 a.m.